Time to dive back into the legislative session. I want to welcome back Jason DeQueer from Advancedus Consulting. We go inside the session every week. Jason, how are you, man?
Hey, good morning, Brian. Hey, look, I know we got to jump into the session, but if I may, I want to tag on to your segment just previous to me jumping on here.
Go for it.
With Baton Rouge Community College. One, I think Brock Cantro is doing a great job. Look, you said bringing in Paul Maneri for baseball, got John Brady, and now Tyrus Thompson over there for basketball. He is turning some heads. And then the second thing, I got to get on the air. I know some people feel certain ways about John Brady, but my opinion, Brian, is that John Brady actually goes down as one of the best basketball coaches LSU has ever had. Now, look, I know he wasn't necessarily a world beater, but to take a program that had hardly no scholarships at the time, build that team and take them all the way to the Final Four.
Right.
I mean, how can he not be one of the best coaches LSU has ever had?
No, and 100% agree. 100% agree. I think the only thing that would go against him is the fact that he followed Dale Brown, who would be the consensus number one in LSU's history. Great on the NCAA level.
Yeah. How many appearances did Dale Brown, and look, Dale Brown brought tons of great talent in here. You and I both know that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how deep he made it, did he only make it to the Final Four, I think, once?
Twice, 81 and 86, yeah.
Okay, and John Brady did it
twice.
Once in his.
Wait, did Brady get two or one?
I think he only had the one. I remember going to that one in Indianapolis. But
that was the one
two.
With Tyrus Thomas and Big Baby. And
correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. But we often forget about, oh, my goodness, what was – I'm going to brick on the name – Lester Earl. We forget about that Lester Earl transition that decimated the program, brought about a sour end to Dale Brown's tenure and a rocky start for John Brady, for sure.
Yeah, he had nothing. He was working with literally nothing, almost like, just here previously. I see a lot of similarities from the current coach, everybody transferring. No scholarship players having to build it back up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you'll get no argument from me. I adore John Brady. And listening to him on the call with Chris Blair during basketball is one of the more from a broadcasting standpoint. And Jason, you know this because you call games. That back and forth between the play-by-play guy and the color commentator, there's a cadence to it. There's a rhythm to it.
Yeah.
And if you're not absolutely. In sync with your partner, it sounds awful. In football, you know the play clock, right? In basketball, they're moving up and down the floor a whole lot faster, so it is that much tougher to get it done. John Brady and Chris Blair together, it's heaven for me. I love it.
No, it's critical. And look, I've been doing high school football on TV for probably about 10 years now. And, you know, Jeff and I know each other like the back of our hands. In fact, I've tried to do games without Jeff, and it's just different. I mean, it's not that you can't do it. You're just not in cadence, like you said.
Right, so. Exactly. So it's a special treat. Plus, his level of insight is beyond compare.
Yep, yep.
All right, legislative session.
We'll talk a little convention like we always do. Obviously, the bill has started to move forward, advanced out of the House. But, you know, Brian, I was very bullish on this convention. There's no doubt that we need to have a convention. Too many things are now in the Constitution, as we've talked about, so many obstacles, roadblocks, barriers to doing major funding reform, tax reform, you name it. Mm-hmm. And those things need to be at the fingertips of the legislature. But my concern now, Brian, as I see HB 800 moving forward, is that we're starting to say and take things off the table. And in that bill, we're starting to say, well, we'll do the convention, but we won't touch A, or we won't touch B, or we won't touch C. And that's as it just leaves the House. As we know, the Senate already is expressing many concerns about the convention. And the convention, the folks that are kind of pushing the convention bill haven't even started negotiating with the Senate yet. And you know how this works. Once you start stripping one or two, three things out, then everybody's going to line up at the Capitol and start saying, well, I want my item off the table, or I want this item off the table.
Yep.
And you start to get concerned that it gets so watered down that if you do go into a convention, you can't accomplish the things that you wanted to accomplish, and particularly in that next fiscal session. And point in chief here, and one of the issues that you know is real near and dear to me is they took reform in our sales tax system off the table. That is not a provision that would be moved out of the Constitution so that we could get to a centralized sales tax system. I have said for years, that is the single biggest tax reform that this state needs to make, is centralizing our sales tax system. And we're basically saying we're not going to even look at it in a convention.
No, and you're preaching to the converted on that one. And yes, everything that you take away, everything that you take off the table, you can't get the ketchup back in the bottle. It's just, once they move over to a constitutional convention, what's going to be left, Jason? What's going to be left?
Well, and that's the concern. Now, and you have the true scholars out there saying, well, even if you say we're not going to touch this provision, once you go into a convention, legally everything is on the table. You can amend or change or pull whatever provision out. But at the end of the day, Brian, I think if the House says we're not going to touch something, the Senate says we're not going to touch something, and the governors, 27, say we're not going to touch something, then I don't see them going into a convention and going back on their word and really opening up that subject matter that they said they weren't going to analyze or potentially move out into the transitional section.
No. Once they've put their name on it, that's where it's going to stand. Let me ask this though, Jason. And I want to open up this possibility. Is there a possibility that they do some level of constitutional convention that gets a little bit of minutia out of the way? It does something small, but leaves the door open for a follow-up constitutional convention that would be a little more all-encompassing. Basically, is there the opportunity for our legislators, who will be our delegates, for our legislators to say, let's move a little bit of money just to earn your trust, and once we've earned your trust, we can open up the door for more?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I hadn't thought about it like that, honestly. I mean, that is a thought, okay, let's start small. Let's narrow it down to just a couple of provisions. Let's make some smaller changes. Maybe they aren't the grandiose reforms that we were thinking at the beginning. We get those done, and then we'll go back into a convention and maybe take another bite at the apple. Perhaps that's the case. I just think that when was the last time we went into a convention in 74?
72, you know, adopted in 74.
Yeah. Are we going to start really making the process back-to-back constitutional conventions? And is the legislature going to be willing to do this? Almost kind of like special sessions, right? Instead of special sessions, we're going to have special constitutional convention session and keep piecemealing it. I think that's the issue, right? I really do. I think if we're going to be serious about making these major reforms, let's pull these items over. And look, I think it was a smart approach that we're not changing the items. We're just moving the items such that if the legislature wants to debate them and do comprehensive reform, it's right there for them. If the people come in there and the folks and the opponents or the proponents come in there and nothing gets done, then nothing gets done. But at least we have the opportunity in front of us to get these things done. So I still like the more holistic approach. But at the end of the day, if anything that moves the needle in a better direction to make Louisiana more competitive, I'm for it, even if it's smaller bites at a time.
We got Jason DeQueer from Advantis Consulting with us. Still a couple weeks ago. I'm losing my level of confidence, but I haven't completely lost it yet. I will hold out hope until the very last second on this one.
You're referring to the convention?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's got to get through the Senate. And a couple things I think you know. They've already talked about pushing the date back. So I think that helps. Obviously, if you start every time somebody is concerned about a provision being moved to the transitional provision and you take it off the table, well, then you'll get more support. But at the same time, you're watering down the whole convention. But if that's the process that it's going to move through and you can get the Senate comfortable with timing and some of the questions that they want answered, I see that it could potentially pass. The question becomes, what are you left with after it passes?
Right. Yeah, and it's I guess my question about the follow-up convention is just me trying to rationalize getting something out of the deal.
Right. No, sure. I mean, yeah, it's a plausible thought, and look, we're notorious for doing that, right? How many special sessions in a row did we go into where we keep taking a little wax at it?
Well, I hesitate to say it, but like it would be, quote, a step in the right direction. And every time I use the phrase step in the right direction, Moon Grafon punches me through the phone.
he doesn't like baby steps, huh?
He does not like baby steps. No, baby steps are left for the Dave Ramsey show.
I get it. And every day I get older and older, I don't like baby steps either.
I hear you. I hear you. But if baby steps are all we can get, then...
And at the end of the day, it's not about us. It's our kids and our grandkids, Brian. And if we can begin to, you know, push this thing in the right direction to have a better future for them,
yes,
I'm for it.
100%. Moving over to the congressional map that the Supreme Court signed off on.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it?
Are we actually going to see where the sixth congressional, all the congressional districts are affected by this, but everybody who votes in the 2024 election is not going to be voting for the same district makeup in 2026. We're going to see this thing change for one time and one time only.
Yeah, that's what it appears. And I mean, just how many times have we gone back and forth? They draw it and, you know, then it stayed. Then we're back to the old maps. Now we're gonna, the Supreme Court just said threw that out. That we're gonna, you know, go with the more recent maps. I mean, this has gone back and forth. I really feel for the candidates who have to run. They're running and they're not running. They're not sure what the district looks like. And Brian, this thing is around the corner. I think we're right up to the date where, Secretary of State Nancy Landry has to go ahead and say, hey, where are we so that we can, you know, begin to prepare, you know, what we need to do in order to have voting take place in Louisiana. But this thing is just going back and forth. You hate to see this happening, but for it to go all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court is obviously a piece of history. But this is going to be interesting. It looks like the more recent legislative maps that were drawn, the districts are very fractured. They kind of drawn all over the board from north up to Shreveport all the way through Baton Rouge. So it'll be an interesting dynamic and an interesting race. And then I think, you know, they may take another stab at this thing later.
They'll almost certainly take another stab at it later because we've seen this map thrown out in the past. The last time Cleo Fields was in Congress, the exact same map that we're looking at now was up there then. I shouldn't say the exact same because we had seven districts then, but that one was thrown out. So I don't know how something that was thrown out in the 90s can be adopted now. It just, nothing about that makes sense. And I'm curious to know why May 15th was the deadline. I mean, it's 2 months away from qualifying. We have 2 months until anybody can actually physically put their name on the ballot. I don't know, and maybe it's a procedural thing. Maybe it's, you know, work that's got to be done behind the scenes that you and I don't know about, but I don't understand the deadline of yesterday.
No, I don't know the legal nuances of that deadline either, Brian. And I'm sure there's some rationale to the reason. But, you know, if I'm a candidate running in that district, I mean, my God, I would want to know what the boundaries of my district are. I mean, they're already out there campaigning. I would need to know. I would at least want to know where I'm going to be campaigning, where my constituents are, who can vote for me, because I still think there's going to be a lot of confusion leading up to the election.
He is Jason DeQuire from Advantis Consulting. We got a lot we're going to pick up on next week, but we're just straight up out of time for this week.
All good, brother. Talk to you next week.
All
Thank
right.
you.
We'll talk to you then, always. He is Jason DeQuire.